This Scoops is proudly produced by News Scoop.
Good day to you. Welcome to Biz Scoops for business news, local and international. I'm Barry Moran. On today's show, the South African Revenue Service is falling short of its goal to collect extra revenue this year, and South Africa's negative consumer confidence is a concern. The economist Waldo Krichel talks about the recent consumer confidence figures. In international business news, the US federal government has shut down. We talk about Africa's mineral wealth, and we'll check in with the editor-in-chief of My Fair Lady, Susie Brokenshaw, to tell us more about the 2025 Santam Woman of the Future Awards and finalists.
A look now at local business news.
The South African Revenue Service is falling short of its goal to collect an extra 35 billion rand in tax this year. This shortfall may see tougher measures for taxpayers next year. SARS has collected 39.3 billion rand so far, enough to meet its baseline target, but below the 49.3 billion needed to ease fiscal pressure. South Africa's consumer confidence remains deeply negative and continues to deteriorate. The FNB BER Consumer Confidence Index fell from minus 10 in quarter 2 of this year to minus 13 in quarter 3, well below its long-term average of around minus 1. The last time the measure was positive was in quarter 2 of 2019. We asked the head of policy analysis at the Center for Risk Analysis, Chris Hutting, how this might affect household spending, GDP growth, and the broader economy.
The forecast for South Africa and household spending, GDP growth, and the broader economy through the rest of 2025 and into 2026 looks to remain muted. There are elements of improvements, but not at the kind of level that we need to see in South Africa. And if one looks at continued declining consumer confidence, then also that factors into things like consumer spending, business activity, and those kinds of broad areas of government activity.
And Capitec has posted strong interim results for the 6 months to August, with headline earnings climbing 26% to 8 billion rand. The bank's client base is currently topping 25 million. Capitec also saw strong growth in insurance, value-added services, and its mobile offering Capitec Connect. We now have the president of the Economic Society of South Africa, Professor Waldo Krichel, on the line with us. Waldo, the recent announcement that consumer confidence is weakening is worrying. Why?
The recent decline in consumer confidence is worrying. Consumer spending grew by 0.5% in the first quarter and by 0.8% in the second. This is reflected in retail sales figures and new vehicle sales, and that's why signs of a slowdown is so concerning. Consumer confidence weakened in the first quarter, improved in the second, and then declined slightly again in the third quarter. It remains in negative territory at minus 13 points, well below the long-term average. It's especially middle-income households, those earning between 5,000 and 20,000 rands per month, who are more pessimistic about economic prospects and their own finances. This is in spite of relatively low inflation and a few cuts in the repo rate. It's also the case that the two-pot money is running out, and when the economy is not creating jobs, households are under pressure. The end result is that an economic growth rate of 1% for this year is starting to sound a bit high.
Thanks very much, Professor Waldo Krichel, President of the Economic Society of South Africa. He's also an economics associate at the Northwest University's Business School. If you'd like to hear more from Prof. Krichel, you can listen to his daily podcast called The Economic Minute on Spotify or Anchor FM.
Time now to take a look at your international business news.
The U.S. federal government has shut down after lawmakers failed to agree on a budget. The deadlock is expected to cause widespread disruption, with around 800,000 federal employees placed on unpaid leave. It's about 40% of the workforce. Essential staff like air traffic controllers and TSA agents will keep working, but without pay, raising fears of flight delays. President Donald Trump warned the shutdown could trigger further job cuts. We're joined by the CEO of Renergen, Stefano Morani. He will be part of the panel discussion at the International Commodity Summit taking place in Cape Town in November. The panel will focus on Africa's mineral wealth, its distribution, exploitation, and solutions to empower the African mineral industry. The International Commodity Summit is South Africa's number one sourcing event for raw materials from the energy, chemical, and agricultural sectors. Stefano, what is the global demand and supply dynamics of key metals?
The rare earth elements and the chemicals is really being driven by the need to transition from fossil fuels over to alternative energies. That's one key driver. Another key driver is also just general technological advancement and development. So if you look at some of the key elements out there, yeah, you've got neodymium, which is key in magnets, and magnets are the basic building block in power generation. You've got copper. Copper is an excellent conductor of electricity. Uranium is obviously increasing in its need now for fission energy. So you've got all of these key metals and all of these rare earth elements that are now coming to the fore. And if we continue to sustain our current level of growth and consumption, then the world is going to need more and more of these metals. It's just a case of there are more people on the planet and more people want nice things. And if more people on the planet want nice things, we need to get more stuff off the ground. It's really just as simple as that.
Which metals are critical for the energy transition?
There are a number of really, really important ones. Probably one of the, let's call it the large scale supplied commodity is copper. Copper is critical because of it's an excellent thermal and electrical conductor. And if you think about it, I mean, it's critical in the majority of every single appliance in the world has some copper in it. Electric cars have copper, etc. But then on the battery side, you've got things like lithium. On microchips, you've got things like silicon. You've got all of these metals which are really starting to come to the fore in terms of their use cases and their demand. On the battery side, you've also got things like cobalt, and then on power generation, I've mentioned neodymium. There's a lot of samarium in some magnets. Then with regards to nuclear, you've got things like hafnium. So there's a lot of really funky metals out there ending in the iums. The world just needs more and more of this stuff as we start to develop this technology. But I'd say the ones to really look out for at the moment, copper. Demand for copper is going up. Copper doesn't have an endless supply, and so there's a lot of interesting things happening in the copper space. And then on the rare earth oxides, those, I think there will always be more demand than supply unless something fundamentally changes in the near term.
How can innovations reduce environmental impact in metal extraction?
This is an interesting one. There are some really incredible technologies out there, seriously incredible technologies. People are starting to explore the extraction of rare earth oxides from all sorts of unique operations. The misnomer, people tend to believe that rare earth oxides are actually rare. They're not. You can find them everywhere. The point is that they just exist in extremely low concentrations. And some of the more interesting technologies which I've seen doing the rounds at the moment, there are technologies looking to extract some of these key rare earth metals from ocean water. Like I said, they exist everywhere, and in some cases they're dissolved as a salt in very low concentrations in seawater. Some people are looking to remove it from that. There's other technology out there where people have realized that you've got rare earth oxides dissolved in the form of salts inside the water in mining operations. And so instead of having water as a waste because of contamination, you can actually purify the water, sell the water back to either agriculture or as potable water.
Before we say goodbye, we're joined by the editor-in-chief of the magazine My Fair Lady, Susie Brokenshaw, to tell us more about the 2025 Suntum Woman of the Future Awards and finalists. This year's finalists are celebrated for their vision, resilience, and entrepreneurial excellence. What criteria and qualities did the judging panel prioritize when selecting these outstanding women?
It's interesting how it's developed. It's developed as we were going along. I mean, we've been doing it now for 11 years. And in the beginning, we always wanted it to be specifically about business. So I think there are lots of awards that award women who are doing, there are many South African women who are doing incredible work in their communities. And there are lots of awards for those women, and we completely applaud that. But this was about business. And the focus was definitely on business because we think that women are only really free when they are financially independent. So for example, if a woman is in an abusive situation and she's got children, it's extremely hard for her to leave that situation if she's not supporting herself financially. But if she is supporting herself financially, she's much more in charge of her choices. And so that's why the emphasis for us was always on business. We wanted it to be about business. And then at some point, obviously, we got a little bit sidetracked because some of those women were doing such incredible, they had amazing businesses, but they were also doing extraordinary work in their communities. And that was when we introduced another category. We introduced the category of social entrepreneurship. entrepreneur. So now there are three categories of women in business, because we wanted it still to be about the business, but we also wanted to award the people who were doing amazing things for their communities. And Santam has obviously been with us right from the very beginning, and they've also been so much a part of this process, obviously, because they are hugely supportive of women in business and always have been, because they offer such good insurance for businesses and for women themselves.
How does the Woman of the Future Awards contribute to addressing the broader social challenges of unemployment and poverty in South Africa through entrepreneurship?
You know, I always say this, and I think people are getting a bit tired of it, but it's true to me that when women are successful, they lift up the people around them. They make sure that the people around them are educated. They make sure that they're fed. And I'm not going, you know, coming down too hard on men, but it's much less likely that a woman who's got a successful business is going to go off and buy herself a football club. You know what I mean? She's going to look after the people around her, and she's going to make sure that they're okay. So there is always that kind of ripple effect with a woman in business. She starts employing people. She starts educating people. She definitely starts feeding the people around her. So that she uplifts the community around her. And that's how I see the economy in South Africa changing. It has to come from grassroots, and it actually always has. South African women have always had a side hustle. All we are doing with Santam is awarding those women for the courage of their choices and the strength to see them through, which is what they do amazingly and have been doing for years in South Africa.
Can you share some standout moments or stories from this year's finalists that exemplify the spirit and impact of the awards?
It's very tricky at the moment to do that with this year's finalists, because I don't want to give anything away, obviously. But there have been some incredible stories along, you know, for all these years. But this year, one of our finalists suffered so badly from chronic hormonal symptoms that she just gave up relying on outside products and decided to educate herself enough to start her own range of products. And within 2 years, her products are being stocked by over 50 retail partners, which I think is incredible. Over 2 years, that's what it took. Another suffered a stroke, a very bad stroke. She was 21 and she had an incredibly bad stroke. And she was sitting at home and she was extremely depressed and not able to kind of look after herself. And she went for a walk one day to buy bread. And on the way, she saw a tire tube on the side of the road. And she took it home and she started cleaning it as a physical therapy, because she needed so much physical therapy. And in the end, she started an extraordinary business making bags out of these tubes. And it's been incredibly successful. And in the process of starting her business, she rehabilitated herself after the stroke, which is, to me, an absolutely extraordinary story.
Looking ahead, how do you envision the role of initiatives like Women of the Future evolving to continue empowering women and shaping a more inclusive future in the years to come?
Well, Santam have always been involved with women in business. And I think part of the role of Women of the Future is to teach women how to make their businesses run as optimally as possible. And for that, we draw on the experience of Santam, who've been in this business for years and years and years. And they've kind of said that, for example, the Women of the Future Awards, we award it to a business that's been going for 3 years, because their experience has shown them that those are the businesses that are likely to last into the future. So I think it is about going into the future with these businesses. I think it's about, we are giving them exposure. We're really maximizing the effect of the businesses. And it's going towards creating opportunities for many, many more women in South Africa. And it's going towards changing the economy from the inside, which is, I think, the best hope that we have. And we are so good at it. Women in South Africa are so good at doing this. So I see it as an incredibly helpful investment in the future. But it's also extremely important that when I say that women learn how to run their own businesses, that they learn the importance of insurance. It's not just about a good idea and seeing a good idea through to fruition. It's also about creating a proper business with proper backstops. And I think we're perfectly positioned to do that with the partnership that we've got.
And that was the editor-in-chief of the magazine My Fair Lady, Susie Brokenshaw. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back next week with more business news, local and international, on Biz Scoops. I'm Barry Murray. Goodbye.
And this was another edition of Biz Scoops, proudly produced by News Scoop.